When you get new clothes, do you like put off wearing them because they're new and they're like, you, once you wear them, they're not new anymore? You know what I mean? Like, okay, so I'm sitting here thinking about what I want to wear this week, right? And I've just had two massive Shein orders come in. Okay. All right. And I ordered from that Southern Grit boutique on TikTok because literally she was doing so well. Her boutique was doing so well. She got hacked and they stole all of her money.
Dang.
Yes. And so she like did like, she was crying out on TikTok about like, not crying out like, in a, I'm not making fun of her, but she was like pleading with people to like, help, you know, they took everything from her and they were trying to like, they were calling lawyers. I don't know her full story. So I went on there and obviously I was like trying to support, you know, so I have all this new stuff, but like once you wear it, it's not new anymore.
Brooke, what you gonna leave it in your closet? I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on Teachers Don't Talk Crime
Podcast.
That came out really weird today. I don't know why, but my brain wasn't processing
what we were like doing this.
I don't know. Like for some reason, I thought you were going to say Teachers Don't Talk Crime. I don't know what's going on. It's fine.
Whew. Mashed potato brain.
Seriously, I have the most mashed potato brain because I managed to get my classroom up and running in a total of 5 days. I think that's a new record.
That's really good.
I think it's a new record.
If you guys, your room's so cute.
Oh, thank you. If you guys haven't seen, it's a Stranger Things themed classroom. So if you go on my Instagrammy at a Barani with 3 Y's and an underscore, you can see the progression. Underscore. Yeah, don't forget.
But you put them on TikTok too.
Ooh, I did put them on TikTok. So they're there. They're on TikTok. They're on my Instagrammy. So if you just want to see my beautiful classroom come to life, just go look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cute. It's really, really cute.
Well, thanks, girl.
This is a recording that we weren't sure was going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was.
So.
Yeah. But we're here. We're doing it.
We are because I went to a wedding yesterday that was 4 hours away. Drove back today. We were going to record. I forgot my charger, but luckily I have a really nerdy boyfriend and he has a random gaming PC hard drive thing that he somehow managed to hook up to my TV. And here we are. Ashley's on my TV.
You know, and yeah, I'm on the big screen, y'all. I'm on the big screen.
So thanks, James.
Gracias, James.
I appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah.
We have a couple of like little updates. This is our second to last, right?
Second to last.
The second to last episode in season one of Teachers Talk Crime. Bow, 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 bow. Yes, we've made it this far, y'all. The end of season one is just crazy. Our seasons are going to run like school years. So our new season will be on
September 5th.
Labor Day Monday?
Labor Day Monday. Because schools go back after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Brooke's already back. I go back.
Been back.
The 29th. But we just figured everybody's back in school then. So we're running our seasons like that. And we have new merch coming out that day, which I'm really excited for.
And we have a little giveaway.
Yes, a little child. That's a good giveaway.
It is. It's really good. More information on that will be on Instagram, so stay posted.
So be on the lookout for that.
So season one's going to have less episodes than like our other seasons, because obviously we launched in March.
Yeah.
And we want to do our seasons by school years. So we're just going to go ahead and start now with like cutting season one off and starting season two with the school year.
Yeah.
Because that makes more sense.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Was there another thing we were supposed to say?
We talked about the merch.
We did.
We talked about the new season.
The new season. I feel like there was something else. Was that it?
I guess so.
Child, I don't even
But
know.
I did go to this wedding, and one of my sorority sisters, who I don't really talk to very much. I mean, well, actually, we hardly ever talk because adulthood, you know, life gets in the way. But like I picked up with them right where we left off, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh yeah, I listened to your podcast. And I was like, that's like the best feeling in the world when mm-hmm. somebody tells me they listen to our podcast. She was like, of course I'm going to support you. And I was like, oh my God.
Thanks. So sweet.
I know.
So sweet. That's how I feel like when my sister like will be like, oh my gosh, I heard your episode and it was so blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, you don't even like true crime like that.
Or when Lugo sends us 5 voice messages ranting about the episodes that she's caught up on. Mm-hmm. I know.
It just makes
my heart melt.
It does. So thanks, y'all. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, we're out here doing things.
Yeah, we're doing things. And we're doing them because, you know, y'all like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also have some other stuff that we'll announce when it's like confirmed mm-hmm. and written in stone.
Yes. Which should be soon. Which
we're excited about.
Which should be very soon. So.
Who would have thought an idea is, look how far.
I know, right? Like, look at this. I always think about it. Like, I literally remember you calling me and being like, so I have this idea for a podcast. And I was like, cool, I'd love to be on it as a guest. And she was like, nah.
No. Actually, your position's more full time. So just letting you know. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure you texted me every single day. Are you sure? Are you sure you want me to be the one? Are you sure? I was like, yes.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Because I was just like, girl, you sure?
Yeah.
Are you positive?
Me?
On a podcast?
With the Wendy Williams.
Oh, voice. Girl, I don't even sound like her. Stop it. The only person who put a microphone was my sister because she was being a smart aleck.
I saw that. I saw that.
But I'm glad
she wanted to see you cry.
Right. I'm glad that none of y'all think I sound like Wendy Williams. So I appreciate y'all. Thank you so much.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, my phone's up and running so I can read the star student now.
Yay.
That was a quick update. Wow, look at that.
Oh, guys, go update your iPhones because apparently there's a breach. Ashley's informed me that iPhones are getting hacked.
Yes.
So go update your iPhone.
They're getting hacked like crazy. They're getting hacked like crazy. So just
delete your nudes.
You know.
Delete your nudes.
Delete those things that you don't want people saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
So.
And yeah. Let me find it. Hold on. I know she...
We do have our stars.
We don't have our estudiante estrella.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. And our a star student this week, our last episode, we talked about Miss Ryder, and we shouted out that she is on the teacher wish list. At number 502.
Yes, 502.
Number 502. And she... she left us a review, but she like gave us a post review. Like she posted like her glowing review on her Instagram, which
she said
like,
her Spotify wasn't working.
Oh yes, because Spotify you could only leave stars. You can't leave like actual words. That's only Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
So she clearly wanted to let us know how great we were doing and made a specific post about it. So I'm gonna go ahead and read our review for Miss Ryder, and I'm assuming it's a 5-star. There's no stars here, but
yep, we're giving ourselves 5 stars.
All right, it says, if you are obsessed with true crime and you, like myself, really enjoy it when podcast hosts make you feel like you're right there with them, this is the show for you. Although Brooke and Ashley haven't known each other for a very long time, how long? What's it been, like 2 years now?
2 years.
Dang! Mm-hmm. The way they interact makes it seem like they have known each other their whole lives. Not only is the friendship between them radiating in every episode, they make the listener feel as like they are sitting in the same room, just hanging out, talking about crime. I am not a drinker, but I would gladly go to a happy hour with these two just to continue with the laughs and the stories. The sarcasm used is exactly on my level, as I'm normally saying something right before or as one of the ladies is saying something similar. The ladies take an approach to normalize and encourage therapy and making sure that mental health is in good shape. That is par to none, in my opinion. Long story short, I've been binging and I'm only on episode 8, but I am # obsessed. Go check them out. # this is what I need.
Aww, that's so a really sweet review.
It's so sweet. And I was like, because I'm looking, all the words are like blending together. I don't know. I think I need new glasses. I keep getting an email that I need to get my eyes checked. like I'm due. So maybe I need to do that.
Me too.
Because I'm a little.
I need to buy contacts. I've been wearing old contacts.
Yeah, you might want to do that.
Yep, but it's like $170.
Yep.
When I think about that, I'm like, do I really need to see? I mean, is seeing really that important?
What do we really need to see for? I'm cracking up. But Miss Ryda, thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah. Love it.
We love it a lot.
That was very sweet.
It was so nice. And like, we got a dedicated post. Like, what? Like, way to up the ante.
Yeah. Like,
I was like, what?
I do need for Spotify to get on it, though. Like, come on.
I don't even leave reviews. On Spotify. I use Spotify in my classroom, but I just realized that I can sign into Apple Music on my computer for my playlist. So I might not even use this anymore.
You also got a shout out for your Bumpy Road Bangers playlist this week.
I saw.
Yeah.
You know, that is the only playlist that I will listen to now. Like, I just keep adding episodes upon episodes. I mean, not episodes, songs upon songs. And it's just like, it's a whole vibe. I keep adding
songs to mine too. But yeah, mine's more country these days. It's more country these days. But I mean, there's a mixture. Mary adds songs whenever we're together. So.
Oh, that's cool. I just went on Spotify and we have a 4.9 rating and we have 48 reviews.
48, like people left stars?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. I was about to say, I thought they couldn't type on Spotify.
No, they can't type. But I think we have like 75 on Apple Podcasts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah.
Thanks, we're just guys. Moving on up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on up. To the big time.
I thought it was the east side. To the east side.
Yep. That's
something apartment in the sky.
Yeah, something in the sky. If something was in the sky, I knew that lyric.
To that, what's the word? To the need that apartment. To the what is that word?
I don't know.
It's going to bother me. Y'all could drop it in the comments.
Yep. Leave a house.
Leave a house with the word that we're missing.
Yep. The lyrics to the song that we seem to not know. I can't.
Oh, gosh. I'm cracking up. I can't. Mm-mm.
Well, we can just go ahead and hit them with it because I got a good one today.
Ooh, I'm ready for it.
So, sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Disclaimer, Ashley and Brooke are just two teachers with opinions about true crimes, so they decided to make a podcast. Sit back, grab your load of teas, and let the crime lesson begin.
He frantically looked around the back seat for something to soak up the two beers he had consumed earlier that evening, but found nothing. That is when a second idea formed in David's mind. He quickly and aggressively ripped out the crotch of his underwear and shoved the cloth deep into his mouth. As he began to chew, he felt a huge sense of defeat. There was no way he would be able to stomach that butt cloth he had partied in all.
Didn't that story just shake you to the core?
Would you like to hear more?
Then you've come to the right place. I'm Trevin.
And I'm Amanda.
And we're the hosts of Seriously Sinister, a true petty crime podcast.
Each week, we take a dramatic dive into real-life petty crimes.
They may make you laugh or cry, but they won't be like any other true crime stories you've heard.
Follow Seriously Sinister wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, so before I start the case, I posted the homework. Ashley doesn't know about my case. She's going to go to the homework and guess like you guys do because y'all send in some funny stuff.
All right, let me look. All right. Ooh, what's that, a fighter jet?
People send in the most random stuff for homework.
All right. So a Boy Scout turned Air Force soldier stabbed somebody and bit them.
That's a really good guess.
Because, I mean, he's a Boy Scout. I mean, look like a Boy Scout. Or maybe he stabbed a Boy Scout. Nah, he ain't stabbed no Boy Scout. Nah. He was.
See, I could see them sitting there, like, trying to put the pieces together.
But what's the plane? Like, did he fly somewhere and was like, let me help you, and then stab them and bit them? Nah, because it would have been a regular airplane. This is like a fighter jet. Like, I feel like he is in the Air Force or something.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. So, a Boy Scout turned Air Force, what do they call it? Air Force
men.
Air Force men. An Air Forcean. stabbed somebody and bit them. That's my final answer.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
So, y'all just keep that mushy set in mind. So, okay, here's the crazy part about this case. I know that a lot of you guys have told us that we do cases that are not, like, widely covered, right? Mm-hmm. Which is super awesome because we want to do different cases that you may not have heard of.
Absolutely.
And this case literally came, I don't even know how I found this case. I have zero clue how I found it. It was not from a podcast. Literally searched. There's only one other podcast that, like, covered this guy. There's not any YouTube videos, like, except for, like, his actual interviews that he did in prison. But this guy was a serial killer.
A serial killer?
Yes. And it's crazy because you hear of, like, the main ones, like John Wayne Gacy. You hear of Ted Bundy.
Yeah,
you hear of Edmund Kemper. Mm-hmm. You hear of, like, all of these that made, like, headlines and stuff. But I have never heard of John Jubert.
Jubert?
Yeah.
John Jubert?
John Jubert.
You know what happened? As soon as I heard that, immediately in my head, what started playing was John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
The other podcast said the same exact thing. They started singing that song the second the girl said it.
Because
I listened
up
to theirs, and they literally started singing that same song. I was like, but it sounds like it.
It
and
does.
I knew you were going to do that because literally John Jubert sounds like the song.
John Jubert.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
All right, John Jubert.
So, John Jubert was born on July 2nd, 1963, in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and was the firstborn to Joseph and Beverly Jubert. His sister Jane came along 2 years later.
Oh, no. Not with all these J's.
Yes, they like J names.
Oh, my gosh.
They stuck with the J name theme.
That is a lot.
Yeah. John Jubert and Jane Jubert.
John Jubert, Jane Jubert. Wasn't there a sibling?
And Joseph Jubert.
Oh, God. Just the Juberts.
The Jubert family's here.
Yep.
They've arrived.
Yikes.
Yikes on tax on bugs.
Oh, seriously.
Yes. So John was, like, an exceptional child, and he gave me a lot of Matilda vibes because by the age of 3, he was already reading books.
Oh.
And by the age of 5, he was checking out books from the library.
Oh.
And that kind of gave me the Matilda vibes, you know, where she's, like, got her wagon and she's going to the library. Y'all know the movie Matilda?
Mm-hmm. You
that
better
was a
know.
Great movie.
That's a classic.
It is. His IQ later confirmed that he was actually exceptional because it showed that his IQ was a 123, which places him in the superior range category.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. It's always the smart ones.
Yes, it is.
The genius ones.
Mm-hmm. Just like Paris Lee Bennett. He was really smart, too.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they know what to do. I think there's so much going on in their brains that, like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that smart, so I don't know. But anyways, in school, which he did attend a Catholic school, he had one friend who later went on to say that they became friends because they were the two smallest boys in their class and were often picked on.
Okay.
The friend, however, stated that he never felt like John had plans or thoughts of retaliation against his bullies, but we now know that anger didn't go away. And one of his teachers went on camera, like, I guess, when this all happened, they interviewed, like, his teachers and stuff. And she also said that he was often a victim of being bullied because he was the smaller of the kids.
Okay.
And they made fun of his last name, Jubert.
I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I could feel him on that level because before I was Brant, I was Roach.
Yeah.
And people used to say that they would step on my parents and my sister and stuff. And I hurt my feelings. And then one day I was like, well, why you got roaches in your house? And then they shut up.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I feel you on that, Juber. Not the murder part, but I feel you on being bullied for your last name. I get that.
So, I mean, yeah, people call me Bulldozer.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
That was stupid. Whoever did that, that was dumb.
I mean, but if I marry James, my new last name's gonna be Ham, and he's over here telling people we're gonna name our daughter Virginia.
Virginia Ham?
And he said we can have a son named Honey Baked.
Do not make that happen. Do not allow that to happen.
Because then they'll be bullied.
Do not allow that to happen, okay?
Yeah.
Not Honey Baked.
Honey Baked. Get over here, Honey Baked.
I'm gonna call him
HB. Yeah. Oh, so, anyways, we do now know that the bullying did actually affect John, but he never let anyone know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was around this same time that John began having disturbing fantasies.
Oh, no.
At the age of only 6 years old, John started fantasizing about killing his babysitter.
Oh,
he went
nah.
on to tell he went to tell a psychologist. Like, after he got caught, they studied him very similar to how they studied Edmund Kemper and, you know, Gacy and all those people. Like, they were studying him. And he was very open about everything that happened and how, like, he's now, you know, and I'm going to get into all this, but how he now can pinpoint why he became what he did and all this stuff. So he admitted that age 6, he started fantasizing about killing his babysitter.
That is really terrifying.
Yes. In the interview, he said,
I'm about to be 6 in January.
And could you imagine?
No, I could not. No.
Like,
and how do you remember, like, what you were doing at 6? Child, I don't know my earliest childhood memory, but it's definitely not at 6. Okay,
so I have a memory at 6 that I distinctly remember, and it has to do with my babysitter. And her name was Mary Elizabeth, and she was babysitting us, and she brought her boyfriend Sean over. I don't remember his name. And we were all watching TV,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to watch what they were watching, and so I snatched the remote out of Sean's hand, uh-huh. and I hit him over the forehead with the remote, and it left imprints. Like, you could see numbers in his forehead. I hit him so hard.
Brooke.
Yes. I'm not a violent child, but...
Are you sure? Because that was pretty violent.
Yeah, but I was 6.
We gonna need you to get some evaluations, girl.
So, I do have memories at that age, but, like, I wasn't planning on killing nobody.
Good to know.
I just didn't want to watch what they were watching.
Mm-hmm. You left some numbers on his forehead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. Wow. So he went on to say about this old babysitter situation that he didn't have anything against her. He just, quote, it was someone to kill.
Ah.
So, like, she did nothing to him. Nothing triggered him with her. Mm-hmm. He literally just saw her and was like, huh, you'd be interesting to kill.
Yikes.
Yeah.
On tykes on bikes.
He also admitted that from this fantasy sprouted others, and he often thought about killing strangers he saw on the street or people he knew. In these thoughts, he would stab them, strangle them, tie them up, and gag them. Mm. This is all around the age of 6 years old.
That is, like, very morbid for a 6. Like, uh-huh. Like, my girls, will, like, they're in this phase now. Like, what movie did we go see? We went to go see that new dog movie with Kevin Hart and a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the dog, like, fell out of the sky and, like, was on the ground. And here goes my biggest twin. Is he dead? Like, she's in a very, are you dead? Is he dead?
Casey's in that too. Like, when we went swimming, Casey would want me to act dead in the pool.
You're like, and I'm just like, okay, like, I get that, like, I understand that death is a part of life. I mean, but they're not taking it that far. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I want to kill somebody. Like, ooh, I want you
right,
to be dead.
Right, they're just trying to understand death.
Yeah, so I just can't imagine a child so young just, like, being like, oh, I just wanted to kill people on the street who I saw. Like, that's just,
yeah.
That's a lot.
It is a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
John admitted that these thoughts were often stress induced. Like, he laid, like, through his therapy and psychological evaluations later on, like, he came to, like, understand himself more. And he mm-hmm. says that these things got worse when he was stressed. Mm-hmm. But I'm really confused at what a 6 year old is stressed about. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe he obviously knew his letters and stuff because he was a genius. So yeah. It's not like you were struggling in school or.
No, he didn't struggle in school at all.
And I don't really, he had a good home life, I'm pretty sure. So.
I'm about to get into his home life.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, go ahead.
So, he said that this was stress-induced and said, quote, I would think these thoughts and that would relieve the tension.
Oh, no.
He went on to add, quote, I have learned that it made me feel better. And as I grew up, it became a habit. So, I guess, like, stress, okay, what do you do? Like, what's one of your, like, things you do when you're stressed? You clean.
Yeah.
You were doing it the other day. I know yours. Never mind. I ain't even got to ask you. You clean. You're a cleaner. Like, when I'm stressed, I will sleep or I will religiously go to the gym. So, yeah. But let's get into his home life, like you said, kind of to get some background knowledge. So John's parents divorced when he was 8 years old, and he had to move to Portland with his mom and sister when he was 11 years old.
Okay.
So they remained in the same town as his dad up until when he was 11, and then they moved.
Mm-hmm.
They found a home and made a nest in the Oakdale neighborhood.
Okay.
John's mom found work as a bookkeeper, and John and Jane continued on with life. So it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was not uphill from here because reports show that John and his mother did not have a good relationship at all. Mm-hmm. Like, she apparently was not mom of the year.
Mm-hmm.
John told psychiatrists that he would ride his bike to see his dad because his mom would not let him see his dad at all. Zero ties to his father. Huh. It was also noted that John's mother would belittle him, whipped him until he was 12 years old, spoke poorly of his father in front of him constantly, and never approved of any of his friends that he kept.
You know, as someone who is going through, you know, co-parenting, it is never a good... You want your kids to formulate their own ideas and and feelings towards, you know, in my case, their father. So, like, you talking down to his dad, it seems in this particular situation, it didn't make him see him his dad as, like, a worse person. It made his idea of his mom, like, decline. You know what I mean?
Right, because he, like, wanted to have something to do with his dad. I mean, like, he was trying to go see his dad.
Yeah, he's riding his bike over to go see him. So, obviously, you know, I feel like this kind of fueled him to go see him more, because it's like, oh, well, my mom is saying all this, I'm gonna go see my dad, because probably because he's so smart, he's probably like, I know it's gonna piss her off. Yeah,
I mean, too, like, it was apparently like he hated his mother and they just did not have a good relationship at all. So in 1990, one of his former teachers again spoke out about how John had trouble making and keeping friends in school.
Okay.
The main thing that he was teased about through middle school, because earlier we spoke about a teacher that spoke about his elementary days,
yes,
and how size was the main thing in his last name. So his middle school teacher also spoke up about how he was again being taunted by his size in middle school and again by his last name. So the bullying was consistent from teachers in elementary, and then they corroborated the story in the middle school as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it continued up through.
Was he like, how small was he?
So that's the thing, is I looked up pictures, and I guess when I think small, I think skinny. He was just really short.
Okay.
He was just like a shorter boy.
Okay.
I mean, but like, I looked at all of his pictures and stuff, and you guys can go to the Instagram and see, he wasn't like abnormally small. I don't know. It was weird.
I'll have to look to see, because I'm curious, because if everybody's like, oh, you're wimpy and you're...
Right.
You know, like, I would expect him to be like tiny.
I did too. Like, I expected it to be like some kind of like health condition that he was so small, but it's not.
Yeah. Okay.
It was also around the age of 12, so a year after they moved to Portland with his mom, that he got his first job. And he was a newspaper delivery boy, which is very common in this like day and age when the newspaper got like thrown on the porches, you know, how you see it in movies and stuff. And he was actually really good at it. He like really liked his job.
Oh.
He maintained this job all the way through high school until he was 17 years old. So he worked as a newspaper boy from 12 to 17, which shows that he, you know, again, stability, responsibility, things like that.
Yeah.
It seemed at this point that John was being somewhat normal. He was becoming normal. He had a job. He did have a friend that, you know, he did hang out with or spoke to. Mm-hmm. His grades were always good. So he used this money to pay for his tuition at an all-boys Catholic high school. And he even joined what we now know as the Boy Scouts.
Yes. I was right with my clues.
He was a Boy Scout. Yes.
All right. Ching, ching. Yep. He's a Boy Scout.
Right. He went camping and even was in the band. So, like, he was doing normal things for a period of time. Mm-hmm. He played, I think it was, my sources were different. One said trumpet, one said clarinet. I don't really know. He played an instrument,
and
regardless.
Those are, like, on two completely different spectrums. Yes. Like,
so, I could see him being a trumpet player, but I don't really know. He played an instrument.
Okay.
Basically. Right. He even ran indoor track for a time. Mm. So, again, he's acting normal.
Okay.
However, even though he did all of these extracurricular activities, he was still a loner, per se. He stayed to himself in his room building model airplanes, and it
airplanes. Okay, I'm just like, I'm trying to see if my homework question. Dang, so I was right. I was wrong. He wasn't in the Navy, but I got the Boy Scouts thing. So I'm a okay.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. So he I don't know, like, if y'all watch Lifetime movies, like the dramatic Lifetime movies and everything, but it's always the kids that build the model airplanes.
You know
what I mean? You know, I can think of like two Lifetime movies where they were the loner kids, or I can think of that one episode of Criminal Minds where the kid shoved an airplane part down his sister's throat because she like broke one of his airplanes.
Oh, wow. That's a little,
yeah.
That's a little
extreme. I mean, that was a Criminal Minds episode, so that's not like a true story, mm-hmm. but... I don't know, it's always the kids with the model airplanes.
I don't really like watch Lifetime movies because I ain't got cable, so.
Yeah, well, my mom was really into them when I was growing up, so.
You know, I don't really, you know.
And it's like one of the five channels that Momo gets. So. We watch a lot of Lifetime movies.
Noted.
Momo gets Nickelodeon for Casey, Lifetime, and the Worship channels.
Okay. It sounds like she's got all.
All the needs met.
You know, for real.
We praise Jesus, we watch Lifetime, then we put on cartoons.
Period. Oh my God.
I get to see her this weekend. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's fun. That'll be fun.
So anyways, even though he was a loner, and I do want to state, like, I'm telling you all of these things, and we've said it on many episodes, being a product of divorce does not make you a killer. Okay? Being a loner child does not make you a killer. Right? These things don't make you a killer. But did he also do these and have all these like weird fantasies and urges and it all kind of combines and it created him? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But I also want to note that like he never dated. There is no record of him ever having a girlfriend, ever being interested in girls, ever nothing. So he never dated even up through high school and even, you know, all through that.
Okay.
John did excel in school and was in all of the honors classes, according to another former teacher that was his high school teacher. John was trying to fit in and still amongst the smallest of his class, which again led to teasing and taunting even in high school.
Jeez.
One of his classmates, after all of this came out and they learned about him, said that it must have been a very painful experience for him to go to school every day. So, it's kind of like one of these situations, like this classmate came out and was like, dang, that must have really sucked. Mm-hmm. Well, then why didn't you stick up for him?
That and, you know, the teachers saw him getting bullied. So what were the
all three levels of school? They saw this elementary, middle and high.
Granted, no one's blaming their teachers, but what was done for the bullying? Like, what were you doing? What, like, did you, I mean, well, this was back in what, the 90s?
90s, early 90s.
So like... what was in place then? Like, was there like some type of peer mediation that the kids went through, or were you just like, don't do that, that's not kind, and just kept it moving? Like, what?
Right. I don't think that the protocols that we have now were in place then.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I highly doubt mm-hmm. it. I mean, I was born in 92, so I don't really remember.
Yeah.
But let's go into, like, who John really was. So there's your background information from who he was in school, what his teacher said about him in his, like, home life. He had a crappy relationship with his mom. Mm-hmm. It never really says anything, or I couldn't find anything about, like, his relationship with his sister. From all accounts that I could find, they had a normal relationship. Right. There was no animosity there. He didn't have a strong relationship with his dad because of the relationship with his mom, and she wouldn't prevent it. So there's some factors here.
Okay.
But let's go into the real John Jubert, and not the John that he wanted to appear to be. All right. During John's junior year, things began to escalate rapidly. On December 12th, 1979, a six-year-old girl was minding her own business when John came from... I'm sorry. I'm reading from my phone, guys.
I was like, John, what?
Yeah. What did he do? On December 12th, 1979, a six-year-old girl was minding her own business when John came from behind and basically stabbed her in the back with a pencil, and kept on riding on his bike.
Whoa. You said what year was this?
This was 1979.
Oh, so this is way before all of this stuff.
So he's a junior. I said that the teacher came forward in 1990.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? Like, the timing was, I was like, I thought we were in the 90s.
No, the teacher came forward and did an interview in 1990.
Okay.
John was born in 1963.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So he's riding his bike, sees this little girl, and is just like, stab, and just keeps it moving?
Uh-huh. Stabbed her with a pencil.
That is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. The wound of the little girl, according to the police reports, was a quarter inch deep.
Ah.
And it's a pencil.
Mm-mm, so he did that with some force.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Then, around 6 weeks later, on January 24th, 1980, a 27-year-old woman was out walking to a writing class near campus when she was stabbed in the kidney from behind.
With a pencil?
With
a pencil?
No, with a knife this time. The woman had to have surgery and spent weeks recovering from a punctured kidney.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't connected to any of these?
None.
Wow.
None.
Was he riding his bike again for this one?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He needed to get his bike taken away.
2 months after that, on March 24th, 1980, a third grader was out walking when John, on his bike again, asked the boy to come over and talk to him. As he came closer, they chatted. For a split second, when the boy turned away, John slashed his throat with an X-Acto knife. The child ran home bleeding, holding his throat. The child did survive and would recover, but it took 12 stitches to close the 2-inch wound.
Oh, no.
He's still in high school.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh. And I feel like it just hits a little deeper because I teach third grade and they're just like so innocent and probably like, oh my God, this big kid wants to talk to me. Ah.
On a cool bike.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, that is brutal.
So obviously the neighborhood and the surrounding area were like up in arms about all of these attacks. Yeah. And they were encouraging kids not to walk alone, to be more mindful of your surroundings. However, John was never suspected for any of this and never once got questioned or was a potential suspect, anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the attacks did stop, and not because the urges stopped, but because John graduated.
Oh.
Yep. John graduated from college in 1981. He graduated from high school in 1981 and went on to attend Norwich University College, which is a military college.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
But he's still not the airplanes that you put in the homework was because he built airplanes, right?
Nope.
Ooh, so I still
But I didn't want to give that away yet.
Okay, I still might be in it. Okay, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So he went on to attend this college, and this is the first time that John was away from being under his mother's thumb.
Okay.
So a lot of people or a lot of sources and a lot of interviews and psychologists said that a lot of his excelling in high school and middle school and elementary school had a lot to do with his mom, like constantly standing over him, like with an iron rod. Yeah. Like, you know, being the forceful drive behind that success.
Okay.
However, we do know he was literally a genius, but it could have been that, yes, she did make sure everything was done and his work and his schoolwork and he studied and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So now he's off away from his mom And he was doing better. He was doing seemingly normal things, and he was studying engineering. He was making friends even.
Oh, nice.
But then John decided that, you know, he didn't want to go to class, and ultimately not going to class led him to flunking. Failing.
Yep.
So he decided that school was just not for him. And when he couldn't find a job, he decided to enlist in the Air Force.
Let's go. Two for two, baby.
Yes. So it was about this same time that the body of a young boy was found near a bridge in the state of Maine.
Ugh.
Yeah. The body was that of Richard Stetson, an 11-year-old boy who told his parents he was going out for a walk on August 23rd. He never returned home. Witnesses did say that they saw the boy that day, and he was out walking on a trail, but that he was not alone. So witnesses also described someone else with him or following behind him riding a 10-speed bike. Other witnesses said they saw these two talking. When Richard's body was discovered, it was noticeable that he had been strangled and stabbed once in the chest. He also had a slash on his right calf that was an attempt to cover up a bite mark.
One, I got the homework right.
So you did.
There's that. Two, why are we escalating to biting now?
I think,
like, you was just stabbing people before, you know, with a pencil, then it was a knife, then it was an X-Acto knife, and now you back to a knife, but now you want to bite them? Like, he's smart enough to know that teeth marks can be, you know, traced back. So, but, like, why?
I don't know. I think it's, like, one of those weird signatures that they always talk about, you know?
I mean, but it wasn't a signature until now.
Exactly.
I mean, but this is also the first time he's killed somebody.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
By the time the body was discovered, as I mentioned, John was already in the Air Force, and he was actually stationed in Nebraska. The body was found in Maine.
In Nebraska? So, where's Nebraska?
The Midwest? I don't know.
Because Maine is over on the right. On the
yes. So he was at college in Maine, and then he joined the Air Force, and they stationed him in Nebraska. So he was not being connected to the murder in Maine because he was long gone by the time the body got discovered.
Okay, understood. Mm-hmm. I got you. Okay.
Yes. So, like I just said, once again, the crime was never linked back to him because he's in a whole different state living a life. He's serving our country, you know? He's probably the last person that's on anybody's radar.
Yes.
While in Nebraska, he told psychiatrists that he began looking at magazines that showed terrified women and would set his alarms for 6:30 a.m. to go look for victims. But don't worry, most days he pressed ignore and slept in and didn't actually act on those impulses.
What magazines is showing terrified women?
I guess those like bondage magazines.
I don't know.
I'm not like, subscribed to any of those.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, urges are still there, and on September 18th, 1983, John took Danny Joe Eberly, a 13-year-old boy, while he was out delivering newspapers.
Wait, the little boy was delivering newspapers?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if that's a job that you really, you know, liked and enjoyed, why would you take him away from doing that?
I'm going to answer those questions because it actually makes sense when I was reading his, like, psychological interviews and evaluations. I mean, none of it makes sense. There's no reason to ever murder.
Yeah.
But there's a connection here.
Okay.
John tied Danny Joe's hands and feet while also duct taping his mouth. He drove to an exclusive area near his Air Force base and stabbed the young boy 11 times, leaving his body to be discovered 3 days later.
Did he bite him too?
I couldn't find that, but then there was one source that said that the bite became a signature. So okay. I don't know if he did continue to bite his victims. However, in the court documents, the bite mark from Maine was the only one ever mentioned.
Okay.
So I'm going to trust the court documents.
Okay.
Yeah. Almost 3 months later, John took another boy, Christopher Walden, 12 years old, while he was on his way to school that morning. He literally walked up to the boy with a knife and told him to get into his car or he would kill him. The boy's body, like the others, was found with multiple stab wounds 3 days after he was kidnapped.
Why is he only attacking boys?
Yep.
I mean, not attacking, because he attacked some girls too, but like, why is he only killing boys?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be answered?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Uh-huh. Although these attacks sparked a ton of action from police, John mm-hmm. still wasn't named or looked at until he almost had another victim in his midst. On January 11th, 1984, John attempted to take a nursery school teacher, telling her that he wanted to kill her.
What?
The woman...
You just walked up to her and was like, hey, I want to kill you.
Well, okay, so she was outside the school and she noticed that he was like circling the parking lot a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked her if he asked her where a certain road was. He was like acting like he was lost. He yeah. asked her where a certain road was and she was like, I don't know. And she was already weirded out at this point. And yeah. then he asked if she had a phone he could borrow and she said no. Mm-hmm. And he then proceeded to tell her that he wanted to kill her. And he tried to, like, grab her, essentially, mm-hmm. and the woman ran for her life, but not before memorizing the license plate.
Let's go.
Kudos to this woman, because I try to memorize license plates all the time just to see if I can do it. I know that's, like, a random. It's really random. I'm really weird.
I can't even remember, like, phone numbers.
I know.
Okay? So.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was circling that specific area looking for another boy.
It would make sense.
I feel like he was looking and for another boy and there. She interrupted him. So he was like, you know what?
I'll just take you.
Yeah. But luckily she got away. So kudos.
Yeah. So she obviously contacted police immediately mm-hmm. and they ran the license plate and found out who the car belonged to and found him in his barracks on base.
Ooh.
He literally told them when they arrived that he was glad police finally caught him because he would have killed again.
That's what you said?
Yeah.
It wasn't like,
it wasn't me.
Thank goodness you got me because I was going to, what?
Yes.
He was just showing his intelligence.
Yes. Like super smart.
Mm-hmm.
He later said in interviews in prison, he told a journalist that he did what he did because it was the power and domination and seeing the fear that was more exciting than actually causing them harm.
So it seems like if he was, you know, that BDSM would have been his jam.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it's not even the act of killing that really brought him the joy. It mm-hmm. was... He was really thrived on the fear.
So he also went on to say, and this comes back to like you asked about like why these boys, right?
Yeah.
So they did all these psychological evaluations on him and they kind of sourced it down to like why he became what he did and all this. Mm-hmm. Apparently it was a memory, a core memory that he had not remembered until he was under these evaluations, that at like 4 years old, he saw his dad choke his mom. He like had witnessed it. And they think that could have been like a factor into it. But also the ages of the boys were 11, 12, and 13. Mm-hmm. And he said that those were his most traumatic years living with his mother and that he was at his lowest he has ever been at 11, 12, and 13. And he saw so much of himself in these boys and the time period of their life that they were in that he was seeing himself in them.
But also, my question is, one, you saw your dad strangle your mom. You didn't strangle nobody.
He did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he strangled them too.
Oh, I thought he was just stabbing them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Stabbing is what ultimately killed them, but.
Okay. So my next point was, I'm pretty sure he wasn't like, hey, how old are you? I'm 12.
Right.
Oh, I'm gonna take you. You know what I mean? So yeah. How did it, like, ironically, like, you got an 11, 12, and 13-year-old? Like, how?
I guess he was a good guesser. I don't know. That's a great point. Hmm. But claimed that the significance of those boys was because he saw himself in them. And it triggered how he felt at 11, 12, and 13 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As I just said, John literally confessed at the sight of police and even pleaded guilty in court. Like, he showed up to court and was like, yep, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
He was never trying to hide what he did. With that being said, the court definitely wanted to run some psychological tests on him, and they found that John has obsessive compulsive disorder and sadistic sadistic tendencies. Okay. He was also suffering from schizoid personality disorder.
Is that different from schizophrenia?
So that's what I didn't understand. Is it different than schizophrenia?
Like, they sound similar.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up because you said schizoid
personality disorder.
I mean, if they were supposed to be different, I would hope the teacher in me that you would change the words a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if they were really that different. So schizoid and schizophrenia, they just seem really similar. Hold on, I'm going to look it up really quick.
Yeah, because a lot of people on TV will go, well, they're schizo. Like, they'll use an abbreviation, too.
Schizoid personality disorder. A condition in which people avoid social activities and interacting with others. Schizoid personality disorder typically begins in early adulthood.
Schizophrenia is where you have different personalities, too, but I think it's like where voices talk to you.
Schizophrenia.
I think it's where you hear things.
Okay. Schizoid personality disorder can include constant daydreaming, but unlike schizophrenia, the daydreaming of a schizoid personality disorder does not include hallucinations or a complete disconnect with reality. So they are different.
Okay.
I just don't like that they sound the same.
Right.
That's confusing, but cool.
However, even with all of these evaluations and diagnosis, he was found to be sane at the time of these crimes. Like,
absolutely.
They said, okay, yeah, you're very troubled. You have this, this, and this. But when you committed these acts, you were completely sane. You knew what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
he did.
Yeah. He's not even trying to deny it, though.
No, he was never. He was never. And I also looked, it's not only schizoid. So the schizophrenia, schizotypal. And schizoid. There's like three different ones.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And they have different categories of like, so if you have schizophrenia, you have hallucinations and delusions. But if you have the other two, you don't. Yeah.
Which one's got the people that talk to you in your head? Well, I guess that's a hallucination.
Yeah. So I would assume schizophrenia, not the other two. Yeah.
Okay.
And it says voluntary social isolation, indifferent to other people, do not have odd, disorganized thought, appearance, and behavior.
That definitely sounds like John Jubert.
So, like, he's together.
And
like
he
appears together.
He was.
He's really not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So, a panel of three judges, this is, like, before juries and stuff like that. So, a panel of three judges sentenced him to death.
Ooh.
And they asked him, because he committed these crimes in Nebraska, which Nebraska still had the death penalty.
Okay.
And they did an interview with him, and they asked him, you know, when you did this, did you think that the death penalty was an option? Like, were you thinking about that? Mm-hmm. And he was like, no. He said, I really wasn't. He said, I knew the death penalty was a thing in Nebraska, but, like, I wasn't thinking long term. So, like, he wasn't thinking that he could possibly be sentenced to death once he was caught.
Or was he thinking that he was just never going to get caught?
Or he might have thought that, too.
Huh.
Yeah. He was also sentenced in Maine, because remember, he murdered that first boy in Maine, but was serving out his death sentence in Nebraska. So, the death sentence trumped the Maine sentence. So, he was obviously serving that one out. But he was found guilty in the Maine trial because of the dental records.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
After receiving counseling and coming to terms with who John is, he stated that he killed the three boys and injured the other three victims because they reminded him of himself at those ages and the anger that he carried out at those particular ages, like we just discussed. John, go for it.
Like, how did you see yourself in them? Like, did they exhibit anger? Because I feel like all of these kids were doing kid things. Like,
right, riding bikes, going for runs.
Like, how did you see this kid and be like, oh, dang, that's how I was at this age? But you're talking about that you were filled with rage. And I'm pretty sure that these children were not just in a rage fit. Like, I'm throwing these newspapers because I'm, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't really get what he says when he says that. I don't really understand that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Hmm.
I mean, that was what he came to terms with, and that's what he said, and that's how he justified it. Doesn't mean he was never trying to justify it. He was trying to, I think, come to terms with who he was. Because every court interview and like interview that I watched with him, he was very just calm.
Matter of fact.
Just kind of like trying to pinpoint, why am I the way that I am? And if you guys can tell me, great, let's figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of eerie, honestly.
Yeah, I can imagine that those interviews were kind of just like creepy, especially knowing what he did, kind of giving you the Paris Lee Bennett vibes that he was in the same like monotone, just very like matter of fact. And just like, it was just like, you murdered your sister.
Uh-huh.
You murdered her.
I mean,
it's like, I love my sister. Like, what? What do you mean you loved her?
Exactly.
Mm.
So John Jubert was executed on July 17th, 1996 by the electric chair. Mm. In his final statement, he did apologize and stated, quote, "I do not know if my death will change anything or if it will bring anyone peace." And that was his last kind of words. And I think what he was trying to say there, and it's like what a lot of family victims say, is mm-hmm. at the end of the day, yeah, you locked them away, or yes, you executed them, but it didn't bring back my family member.
Yes.
So I think what he was saying there was, I don't know if me dying is going to bring anyone peace, mm-hmm. but I am sorry.
I don't really believe that he was sorry.
No, I don't think he was either.
Mm-mm.
And I do want to bring this to light because I found this interesting in comparing it to what we do, and those who study like actual criminals and serial killers. So one mm-hmm. quote from a source said the following, "But John never stood out to many who knew him and was perceived as a quiet, intelligent, and nerdy youth with few friends. The contrast between John appeared and what he was actually like doesn't surprise experts who have studied serial killers." And I found this interesting because there are a lot of strategies that involve our students as they get older. However, mm-hmm. students that I have encountered that displayed similar traits as John would never really shock me if they did commit a crime one day.
Mm.
And I'm not talking crap about my students, guys. You got to understand that. I'm just saying that the students that I have taught in the past 6 years that have similar traits and characteristics to John's behavior, if someone one day knocked on my door and said, "Bob," I don't teach a Bob, "Bob murdered Sally. Can we get a quote from you? You taught them." I mean, I would never tell the reporter that I'm not shocked, but at the end of the day, I would close the door and tell James, like, that sucks and that's really awful, but I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
And I only have I literally only have 3 kids that would not shock me. Like, I don't teach a whole bunch of serial killers, guys, but yeah. I'm just saying that if you know what we do versus what someone studies serial killers, we do see a lot of these behaviors.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, we see the honors kids and the super intelligent kids but don't want to hang out with anybody mm-hmm. and choose to isolate themselves and work alone.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, in third grade, it's not like, I have some kids who prefer to work alone just because, you know, group projects aren't their thing. I hate group projects myself. I feel like I've never been in an effective group project before, except for my in my sign language class. We did really well and collaborated really well. But like, when it's more than two people and it's like a legit group project, I hate those. I can't stand them.
Yeah, well, one person seems to always do more work than the others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but like in third grade, I mean, we don't see as intense, you know, we see some isolation, but like they're at the age where they just want to, you know, they want those friends and they want to mm-hmm. you know what I mean, that's things that they thrive for. So
right, so that is the case of John Jubert, the serial killer. And again, mm-hmm. it's crazy, and if you guys knew about this case, then wow, because like, I've never heard of him. And it's crazy because mm-hmm. so many people cover serial killers and he's just not one that you hear about. But he started torturing kids at such a young age and never got caught and was mm-hmm. serving our country. Like, don't they do psychological evaluations?
They definitely do. So like, he probably skewed it because he is so smart. Right. You know what I mean?
You're right. I didn't think like that.
When you have that brain capacity, you can just make anything
go in there and look normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, what he was, schizoid personality. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a wolf in sheep's clothing, if mm-hmm. you will.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's terrifying.
Yeah. Because it could be anybody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's like, so, you know, I think it was after, I can't remember what victim it was, and I don't want to say the wrong victim, but after he had murdered one of the boys, mm-hmm. can't remember which one, I didn't write this down, he went to, and this is why he was called like the Boy Scout Killer or something on one YouTube interview, it was labeled like the Boy Scout Killer. He didn't kill mm-hmm. Boy Scouts, but he was a Boy Scout. He left the scene of the crime and went like camping and went to a Boy Scout meeting and like hung out with other Boy Scouts after committing this murder.
That's weird.
Again, a wolf in sheep's clothing, like you said.
Yeah, that is terrifying. Like, you just killed somebody. And you're just like, hey guys, Scott's honor. Like, what?
Yeah. Let's build a fire.
Right?
Let's get our
wilderness badge. Like, yeah. No. You need all your badges taken away.
You do. You do. Ugh. But that's John Jubert.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith.
Yeah.
His name was my name, too. Yeah.
So.
Wow.
That was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, next week is our
season finale.
Season finale. So get ready for that. And it'll be my first day of school.
Yay!
It'll be my first day of school, yeah.
Yeah.
It will. So the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So ding, we'll see dong. You next week, you know?
For the final finale. It's the final countdown.
I was literally about to say it. Oh, that's so crazy. Can you believe we've gotten through like one season? Like, wow.
No.
33 episodes. Like, that's so surreal.
Literally, I recorded and I meant to send you the draft because I'm gonna redo it, but I really want to start like a True Crime Tuesdays and post like one of our post a synopsis of a crime on TikTok and like really promote our podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
But I went back and listened to episode one, Nicole
Kiss.
Yep. And wow,
we've come a long way.
Wow.
Like, I knew, like, this would be a thing. You know, it was never like, oh, we're going to be done after 10 episodes. Like, it was never that. But to be where we are right now, for this to happen so quickly within not even a year of being out, like, that is...
Yeah.
That is an accomplishment in itself. And I'm just very proud of us. I'm proud of the evolution. And granted, we're not done growing. You know what I mean? Like, but from where we came from Nicole Kaskus, mm-hmm.
in the closet
to John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith, like, yep. We, you know, yep. We're doing it.
And honestly, thank you guys for like rocking with us since Nicole Kaskus.
Yeah, because after you heard, I mean, our sound quality, I mean, our content was still the same. Like, we are still the same Ashley and Brooke that you hear today. But, like, our sound quality was in the trash bag.
Yep.
It's
a lot.
Yeah. Just thanks for sticking around.
And trusting the process. And trusting the process.
Yes. You know, every class just gets better and better, I tell you.
Yep. And I'm sure we'll look back at this episode on season three and be like, oh my God, you remember John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith? We sounded like crap.
we don't sound like crap on this.
We
sound pretty good. I mean, hopefully, you know, my echo, because I've been noticing the echo on my end for like the past couple of episodes, but you guys haven't mentioned anything about it, so maybe I'm just hearing things. I would hope not.
So drop the little microphone in the comments if you can hear an echo.
So we got microphones this episode, and what else?
Houses.
And a little house because we need the lyrics.
Moving on up. I think it's to the big side. Yeah. Wait.
No, it's to the east side.
What did I say?
You said big side.
Big house. Moving on up to the big house. Well, I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
I just need to know the words because it's something apartment in the sky high or sky high. Oh. I don't know, guys. All right. Y'all got to go.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.